Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast, which is brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. Today I will discuss six of the presentations that were held at the United European Gastroenterology Week of 2023, which was held from 14 to 17 October of this year in Copenhagen, Denmark. Enjoy listening. During the plenary session, results from the Maestro-NASH trial were presented. This trial tested resmetirom as a therapy for patients with non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. The double-blind, placebo-controlled phase 3 Maestro-NASH trial randomized adult patients with biopsy-confirmed NASH and fibrosis in a 1:1:1 ratio to three groups: placebo, resmetirom 100 mg, or resmetirom 80 mg once daily. The dual primary endpoint at week 52 was NASH resolution with no worsening of fibrosis, or at least one stage improvement in fibrosis with no worsening in the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease activity score, or NAS. Professor Jörn Schattenberg of the University of Mainz presented the primary findings of the trial at 52 weeks. Both the 80 mg and the 100 mg arms significantly outperformed the placebo arm in terms of NASH resolution, with 26% and 30% of the participants achieving this endpoint in the active arms, compared with 10% of the participants in the placebo arm, with a p-value below 0.0001 for both. Similarly, a significantly larger proportion of participants in the resmetirom arms reached at least one stage improvement in fibrosis, with 24% in the 80 mg arm and 26% in the 100 mg arm, compared with 14% of patients in the placebo arm. The rate of occurrence of any or serious treatment emergent adverse events was comparable for the three study arms, around 91% and 12% respectively. Professor Schattenberg mentioned that the treatment-emergent adverse events-related discontinuation rate was somewhat higher in the 100 mg arm, with 6.8%, compared with the 80 mg arm, with 1.9%, or the placebo arm, with 2.5%, but this trend was only visible during the first 12 weeks of the study. Diarrhea and nausea were the most common treatment-emergent adverse events in the active arms. Then there was Dr. Bruce Sands of Mount Sinai in New York, USA, presenting results of the Artemis UC trial. This study investigated potential new agent for the treatment of ulcerative colitis, or UC, provisionally named MK7240. So MK7240 is an investigational anti-TL1A antibody inhibiting TL1A-mediated signaling. Phase 2 Artemis UC trial randomized 135 participants with moderately to severely active UC 1:1 to placebo or this new agent. Participants in the active arm received 1000 mg of this agent via intravenous administration on day 1 and 500 mg every 4 weeks starting from week 2. The primary endpoint was clinical remission at week 12. This primary endpoint was met, with 26.5% and 1.5% of the participants achieving clinical remission at week 12 favoring the active arm over the placebo arm, with a 95% confidence interval of 13.9 to 36.6 and a p-value below 0.0001. In addition, all secondary efficacy endpoints showed improvements with MK7240 compared to placebo. Adverse events were observed in 40.3% and 41.2% of the participants in the placebo arm and the experimental arm, respectively. Serious adverse events were reported in 7.5% and 0% of the participants, numerically favoring the active arm over the placebo arm. Finally, the rates of infections and infestations were comparable, with 16.4% in the placebo arm and 14.7% in the experimental arm. Another interesting study was presented by Ms. Linda Weiser of the Heidelberg Technologies GmbH in Germany. She presented the findings of a study investigating a digital intervention for patients with irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS. Currently, most patients with IBS do not receive adequate treatment, said Ms. Weiser. Digital therapeutics may help close the healthcare gap by providing guided self-help for chronic conditions such as IBS. The current study randomized 378 participants with IBS to a digital health application intervention, or to a control intervention which comprised a modified sham app. The digital intervention included an in-app symptom journal and a personalized treatment plan with nutrition therapy and various psychotherapy modalities. The investigators used the IBS Severity Scoring System, or IBS-SSS, the IBS Quality of Life Questionnaire, the Work Productivity and Activity Impairment Questionnaire, and the European Healthcare Literacy Service to assess the efficacy of the intervention. After 12 weeks of intervention, participants in the digital intervention arm significantly improved at all the assessed efficacy outcomes, including symptom severity, quality of life, work productivity impairment, activity impairment, and health literacy. The assessed digital health application intervention was largely effective in participants with IBS, improving situations from disease symptoms to work productivity without interference from a healthcare practitioner, concluded Ms. Weissach. A recent international study explored the efficacy of an epinephrine-enhanced solution in the endoscopic submucosal dissection, or ESD, of early gastric cancer treatment. Dr. Hon Chi Yip of the Chinese University of Hong Kong in China presented the findings of a double-blind, multicenter randomized controlled trial. The study involved 774 adults diagnosed with gastric mucosal neoplasia, excluding those with multiple lesions or those on certain anticoagulants. Participants were divided into two groups. One received an epinephrine-added solution, and the other, a control group, did not. The study's primary outcome was the duration of the procedure from the initial mucosal incision to the completion of resection, and secondary outcomes included intraoperative hemorrhage and post-procedure adverse events. The epinephrine-enhanced solution significantly reduced procedure time, with 59 minutes in the epinephrine arm versus 68 minutes in the control arm with a p-value of 0.018 and the number of intraoperative bleeding episodes with a mean of 1.76 in the epinephrine arm compared to 3.02 in the control arm with a p-value below 0.001. The addition of epinephrine significantly shortened the procedure time by about 10% and reduced the need for intraoperative hemostasis, said Dr. Yip. The study advocates for the routine inclusion of epinephrine in the injection solutions used in gastric ESD procedures, representing an advancement in the field. Then there was a study which may offer hope for patients with short bowel syndrome with intestinal failure and colon in continuity, a rare gastrointestinal condition that is marked by a high risk of developing intestinal failure. The study, presented by Ms. Astrid Verbiest of the University of Leuven in Belgium, investigated the safety and efficacy of apraglutide, a novel long-acting GLP agonist. The open-label phase 2 study was conducted across multiple centers over 52 weeks and assessed the impact of apraglutide on patients with this condition. During the study, 9 patients whose small bowel lengths varied from 0 to 50 centimeters and who had 43 to 100% of their colon preserved received weekly subcutaneous injections of apraglutide 5 mg. Results revealed a marked decrease in the weekly necessity for parenteral support volume from an average of 9.9 milliliters to 5.2 milliliters following 52 weeks of intervention, with a p-value of 0.0004. Accordingly, there was a remarkable reduction in the parenteral support energy content, diminishing from an average of 7,900 kilocalories weekly to 4,400 kilocalories, with a p-value of 0.0006. Additionally, patients benefited from an average extra 2.1 days without needing weekly parenteral support. The findings of this research highlight significant clinical advancements for patients with short bowel syndrome. Apraglutide has a reliable safety profile and clinical efficacy, as seen by a 52% reduction in the weekly parenteral support volume post 52 weeks of treatment. A closer examination of the metabolic balance outcomes will be essential to fully assess apraglutide's influence on intestinal absorption and to get a better understanding of its functional mechanisms, concluded Ms. Verbiest. The last talk of today is about obefazimod, which is currently being tested in a phase 2 trial for patients with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis, or UC. Obefazimod has demonstrated encouraging efficacy and safety data after 8 weeks of induction therapy in a population of participants with UC in a phase 2b study. Here, Dr. Severin Vermeere of the University Hospital Leuven in Belgium presented the findings of the open-label 96-week maintenance study. The 217 included participants received 50 mg of obefazimod once daily, orally administered. Over 90% of the patients had been exposed to two or more biologic therapies and/or JAK inhibitors, stressed Dr. Vermeere. The clinical remission rate at weeks 48 and 96 were 54.8% and 52.5% respectively. Other outcomes displayed promising efficacy results for obefazimod as well. At weeks 48 and 96, clinical response rates were 82% and 72.8% respectively. Endoscopic improvement rates were 61.3% and 59%. And endoscopic remission rates were 33.2% and 35.9%. Treatment-emergent adverse events were reported in 68.7% of the participants over the two-year course of the study. In 7.8% of the participants, adverse events had led to study discontinuation. COVID-19, headache, and UC were the most common treatment-emergent adverse events. Finally, serious adverse events had occurred in 8.7% of the participants, including a wide variation of events from which no concerning pattern could be distilled. At week 96, obefazimod showed promising efficacy and safety results in patients with UC. The agent is currently being investigated in phase 3 trials as therapy for patients with this condition, concluded Dr. Vermeere.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.